This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
We are back. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech, episode 377 for Tuesday, January 27th, 2015. And at my virtual side, as usual, talking about the tech stuff that we decide to talk about each week, Sally Draper from lovely New Ulm, Minnesota. I can say that firsthand because I was just there, and it was kind of lovely. Hi, Sally.
It is lovely. Thanks. Hi, Martin. Nice to join you today, and looking forward to a great podcast. Not just me joining you today. We have our good friend and education guru, Jason Schmidt, on the line as well. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Sally. Hey, Martin. How are you guys doing?
Good. Education guru. Wow, that's a pretty good lead.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was really just going to try and gloss over that one and pretend that it didn't happen. But
he wants us to set the bar a little lower so he can exceed expectations.
Yes, so. Let's spell guru with two O's and then we'll be good.
That's pretty good.
That's internet spelling anyway, two O's before and after the R.
So. That's right, yep.
Okay. Well, Jason is tech coordinator at Bennington ISD in Omaha, Nebraska. I didn't say that part, so I needed to get that in there. Y'all can keep talking now.
Oh, okay.
Happy to have you, Jason.
We're starting a brand new series today, a series that will run once a month I don't know how long we're going to do this, Sally, 5 or 6 times or so?
We're I think it's 5. Yep.
Wells Tech Goes to School. We do need some schooling, and fortunately we have these experts coming in each month to talk about technology, classroom, school, etc., and Jason's the expert, the guru this week, and we're going to talk about math and technology. I kind of get technology, but I'm terrible at math, I'm afraid to say, so I'm glad I've got both of you who got that cornered. I'm glad we've got the experts on the show today. So, what about math and technology? Is there any tools, ideas that are going to be new under the sun for those people that maybe play in that space?
Well, I think the idea of the series, Martin, is that we kind of pull together a lot of the different math-oriented websites, apps, whatever it may be, extensions for your Chromebooks, whatever, so that we have kind of a master list and span all the different grade levels. So I pulled out a couple of my favorite math
playground
activities. Yeah. And, you know, over time, I think we can beef up this list, add more and more to it as we hear more. It's nice to kind of put a stake in the ground, though, and say these are some resources and let's grow from there and have some others. I'm going to start it off with featuring a really fun math activity for early elementary or maybe your preschool kindergarten age group, your early childhood ministries or whatever. It's a website called Two More Than, and when you click to play, one of the numbers from 1 to 20 is highlighted, and you're supposed to pick the number that's two more than it. So you have to look around and find the number and click on it that's two more than. And when you do that, another one comes up. As I said, it goes up to 20, so it might be kind of difficult for the little guys, but if you're having trouble, there's a question mark icon. You can click on it, and it shows you a number line. So you can find the red number, 13, and you can count two more than and see that you're looking for the number 15 and then click on it. So fun little exercise. There's a companion one called two less than. Imagine that, where you can take two away. And for those early learners in math, it's a really great way to practice their addition and subtraction skills, kind of visualizing that number line. And if they need to, they can bring up help. So I thought that one was worthy of making the list. I don't know what you guys think.
So Sally and Jason, is there a compendium of some sort or a good index or resource living out there that you go to find this kind of stuff, or you just kind of do a Google search?
Well, I can tell you, Martin, what I tell my teachers when I get somebody who's asking for something in particular, I actually tell them to stay away from Google, just because you get a couple of really good things like right at the top, because those are, you know, commercial products, and they're very well linked and very well known within a search engine. But then, if you want to get beyond those, that's not always the best way to find what it is exactly that you're looking for. So what I always point my teachers to is I tell them to go to a social bookmarking website. So my personal favorite is Digo, of course. And we've talked about that on the show in the past. And I think one of the things that I'm more than willing to share is my Digo library. But beyond just my own materials, there are literally thousands of people who have looked at these websites and added a tag, let's say math or maths, or depending on where they are from in the world where they've bookmarked these things. And the reason that I point people to Digo or to a site like Delicious or Pinterest or something like that first is because all of these have been seen and vetted by a human being. With Google, you're all trying to game the algorithm and figure out how to get your search results ranked higher, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a quality resource. So if I point my teachers to once again to a site like Digo or Delicious, they can go in there, and I know that a human being has seen this and made a judgment call on that, and that means that it's a little bit more worth consideration, a little bit easier to follow through on, to have that be something useful.
Yeah, rather than just a raw index, you've maybe got somebody who's curated a list or maybe written a little bit of a review saying, hey, it's good in middle school, but once you get below third grade or whatever, it's not a great resource, or not as good as maybe you might think it would be. It doesn't work for this reason, or doesn't work on this platform, or those kinds of things are maybe things that you have to stumble on and discover yourself, which is kind of a waste of time if somebody else has done it for you.
Yep. One of the goals of this 5-month series, Martin, is for us to kind of curate a list ourselves and publish that on the Wells Tech site. So over time, we'll add things that we know, at least amongst us, work well in the classroom and have some traction behind them. So we have a math list started and a technology list started, and I expect these to grow over time, as we learn more and more resources that are available.
Great. What's up next?
Well, a couple of other math ones that I thought merited a look or a feature on the show today. One is a website called Free Rice, and I know it's been a long time since we've talked about Free Rice, but it's a website that as you work through the problems, they're donating on your behalf an amount of rice to people in need and wherever that need is. It's, I think, associated with the United Nations and fighting world hunger and that kind of thing. But what's neat about Free Rice, it comes up typically on vocabulary words, but there are other subjects available there. And it also, learns kind of the limits that you have on your skills. I'm demonstrating multiplication practice on Free Rice. And if you get to a point where you start missing a lot of them, then it'll kind of back off and give you ones at the same level or whatever. And I think these kind of activities are nice to have available for your students for some of their free time or whatever, just for drilling. And again, just the fact that it kind of learns who they are and adjusts to what their skill levels are as they work with the site. So, I know there's some sites, and we'll talk about Khan Academy specifically, where you could base your whole math curriculum off of what's available online. But there's other sites that are really great for drill that give the kids some more quick feedback and good for filler time and things like that.
Okay. Jason, what's kind of your go-to? What do you recommend most often when you've got your math teachers at the door wondering, hey, what good resources are available?
Well, one of the things that we make use of a lot in my district is we have a subscription to IXL. So let me just do my screen share here real quick. IXL is a huge website for all kinds of, you know, any kind of math kind of skills that you wanna work on. You can use this. So you know, everything, and it's all Common Core standards aligned. Based on age level. So you have tons of different exercises and content and things like that here. The practice ability is infinite. You know, you don't have kids worried about doing the same thing over and over and over again. It's always going to be something different no matter when they come in. There is a cost to that. It's not real expensive. At least in my world, I suppose it's probably a little expensive to schools that want to take advantage of it. But I want to say it's somewhere around $3-4 a kid for an entire year. But you get really great records. You get lots of different kinds of exercises and different things that kids get the practice to work on. And then it gives really great record keeping for you as well. So you can know exactly how many times the kid has attempted a particular problem, and if they've got that mastered, they earn points. It keeps track of how much time and things like that. So you know, it does a really great job as far as all of that's concerned. And then it's also got an iPad app where they can sign in and they can access all of those same materials that they have available online. They can do the same thing on the iPad. A couple of things that you do kind of have to be watch for, though, is it's up to the kids. They can pick whatever level they want. So you could have sixth graders coming in here and working on preschool or kindergarten things that, you know, just to make themselves look busy. So you do have to, but you know, it gets reported to you as the teacher to see what each kid is doing. But you do have to kind of keep an eye on that. But we've found that this is a really great way to help address some of those additional instructional needs that kids might have. And we use this with kids all the way from, we start at second grade and we go all the way up to 10th or 11th grade, I think. They can access these materials. So it's pretty good stuff.
So this would be in addition to the resources available from the textbook or the curriculum that you would have in place. So these would just kind of fill gaps or give extra practice materials.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, for those kids who are either below level or beyond level, we do a lot with IXL in that, more of the enrichment and remediation kinds of things. And then those kids that are on level, we use this to push them maybe a little bit and see and just validate where they're at and see how we can kind of meet their needs even better.
Okay, cool.
Jason, I'm not sure if you pointed it out, but as you were working through those exercises you were shown on the screen, there's also an option to read to you. So for people with reading disabilities or whatever, there's audio reading of the problems and that kind of thing. And I know people that are behind their levels and things in reading might be fine in math, except they can't read the word problems and things. So the fact that it gives you that option is a big plus as well.
Yeah, and I know it does that on the younger grades ones, but I don't know for sure if it does that with the older kids.
Okay.
So it looks like you've got Khan Academy up on the screen. You want to go for it?
Sure. It's kind of a standard, and I would guess many of our listeners are aware of Khan Academy, but they have, like I said earlier, a pretty robust full math curriculum, and they have another component to it that perhaps you haven't experienced. I know Khan Academy started as videos where you could watch the video and learn, but they also have a really robust drilling of the concept and a coaching component. And so the students are in kind of a a gamified drilling thing where they earn points and badges and things like that. And you as the teacher can go behind the scenes, just like Jason described with IXL, you can go behind the scenes and get all the reporting. They even email you periodically and say, here's your students' time, you know, and progress on the different things they're working on. So there's two sides to the tool, and if you haven't experienced that coaching side, I do have a link that I'll include in the show notes to all kinds of coaching resources. Let's see if I can bring it up real quick.
Is there a fee to Khan Academy at this point, or you reach a certain point and there is one? Is it totally free?
I'm pretty sure it's totally free. Jason, maybe you could correct me.
Yep, you're right. It's completely free. They received a couple $1 billion from the Gates Foundation. So there's no plan to ever charge for it.
So and now on my screen I'm just showing those coaches resources, and they have it broken down for K to 12, for parents and mentors. There's information for homeschoolers. There's out of school time programs and a robust list of reference materials, so you can learn all about creating your different accounts, your class accounts, adding students, and the whole coaching process. There's just lots and lots of support here and how-to guides to help you get started. If you scroll down the page, it's a pretty long page. There's case studies of schools that have used it, people that have used it in homeschool environments. All of that is available on Khan Academy. So, yeah, lots here.
You've done a really nice job in rebuilding their website. It used to be a little kludgy to work through, but it's a nice resource at this point. So. Very
definitely
easy to navigate. It's got kind of a Google look with material design, where it's a little bit blocky, but primary colors and looks nice. It's visually appealing. So I'm assuming it's mobile friendly too. So that's good.
Yeah. Those are the math features, but I do want to just make a comment. You know, if there's something that you're using in your classroom, those that are watching today that isn't on our page, we'd love to grow our math resources, so be sure to let us know.
Yeah. So we should probably move on to technology. Before we do that, maybe from your perspective, Jason or Sally, what is the state of technology education? It used to be, you know, well, we're all going to go to the computer lab and we're going to pull out, you know, a Mavis typing tutor and, you know, spend a half hour and then we're done. What's the objective at this point with all these kids coming in with probably some technology skills already?
Well, this has been a really big hot button in our planning, both at my district and with our Lutheran Elementary School too, where we're trying to figure out how this fits in with the whole instructional process. You know, what purpose does technology have with how kids learn, and not just how they learn, but what they learn. You know, do we need to teach them typing anymore? Do we need to have a technology class? And if you look at the way that things are just going with education technology trends, you know, if you read ISTE articles or the circles that I run around in, there's a really big push right now for an integrated approach. This is not, you probably have heard the saying, if technology is an event, you're doing it wrong. And you know, that's really kind of the way that that I see things are going. No, not so much. We have our technology class where we do stuff with the computers for a half an hour a week or whatever it is, but it becomes a, you know, we're using technology to learn about math. We're using technology to explore characters in our reading class. We're using technology to share our faith and to witness and collaborate with each other and learn how to use these tools that are really becoming a part of our everyday lives to be more productive and to learn more effectively and kind of sift through all the information that's coming at us.
Right. So maybe here the focus is not so much on, you know, some of the tools, because we talk about that each and every week, but maybe some of the more you know, the engineering or the programming side of technology, the STEM stuff, I guess, probably is the best way to put it, where we've got kids that might be interested in leveraging technology for all the things that you mentioned, but maybe a career in it. Is that kind of accurately reflect what we're maybe what we're focused on?
Well, I can tell you, as I was looking through some of my resources and things that I was thinking about, I was coming from the perspective of making technology do stuff.
Right.
So, you know, with the coding aspect of things and using the computer to make something that nobody else has done yet.
Right.
Is kind of the perspective that I took.
Yep, if then that kinds of things, you know, integration, web services, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. I've even heard the idea that maybe at least at the high school level, the coding would be considered a math credit or whatever, so that it's more of a course on coding that's getting credit now. So mm-hmm. I think that's where we focused on in our show today. Our resources for technology are around the coding space, basically.
I bet you're going to talk about Scratch.
Got to scratch my itch. Yeah, Jason even shared something new about Scratch, that there's a Scratch Junior. So for tablets and for the youngsters, looks like starting at a very early elementary age, they can do Scratch on a tablet. And it looks like there's an Android and an iOS version of Scratch Junior. When they're ready to move up from that, they can get Scratch for free. It was developed at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, available online at scratch.mit.edu. And it's kind of like Lego block programming, where they snap the different program components together. They can publish them on the Scratch website. I was playing around with some of these today and making Oreos and bouncing balls. They're able to bring in their own graphic designs, or they have plenty that they can work with right there on the Scratch website and learn all about variables and random and loops and all kinds of things that you can do with the Scratch engine. So a great way to introduce people to programming.
Yeah, and I gotta brag on one of the kids that I've been working with this school year. We have one of our schools is doing a Genius Hour kind of a project this year, where they've got sixth graders and they're just they have basically an hour and a half on Friday afternoons to kind of explore whatever it is that they want. And we have an expo coming up in the spring, but there's one kid who's like, I really like Scratch. I like to work on that. And he organized a team, and he's the project leader. He's putting together wireframes and all of this stuff. And he and a few of his buddies are building a game in Scratch. So, it'll be really cool. It's not just it's a much more powerful platform than you might initially think of. There's a whole lot that you can do on Scratch. It's just really neat to see what kids come up with when they're working with this.
This is an area that I think is a little bit different than some other areas. For instance, history or even math, for that matter. You're trying to master a subject to obviously expand your knowledge base, but at the end of the day you're assessed with some kind of test that you've now captured or mastered that. With things like this, you're building something and you have the joy of seeing something work right before your very eyes. I know when I do programming, it's and something's really sticky or hard, when I finally get it to work, then I can go to bed, because I've accomplished something, and I feel good about that. And that's just one down, and then there's a next challenge and a next challenge, and that's good. That's a good life skill as well. So there is a reward for hard work and dedication, and these kinds of things, Scratch or these other tools, are kind of like that. You can see it form and work, and then boy, that's a great feeling. Great motivation.
Definitely. And I think Scratch is maybe one of the pioneers in this space, where there's been a lot of recent development around coding and recent emphasis. And one of the big recent pushes is from code.org, where they have their Hour of Code each year, and they really promote. They have a whole curriculum. If you're a teacher, if you're a homeschooler, a parent, and want to work with some different coding skills or whatever, check out code.org, because you can easily get started. It's free. There's lots of different levels. You can start with the little bitty guys and doing, I think I mentioned it before on the podcast, where they have the frozen girls, and you teach them to ice skate and make snowflake patterns on the screen or whatever. And you do that, again, with those kind of Lego blocks of code that you build. And maybe reading skills aren't even necessary for some of the early stuff. They have Angry Bird tutorials, tutorials that teach Java. It goes on and on. So lots of things for all different age levels and fun stuff.
Yeah, and the really great thing about code.org is you have additional activities that are kind of offline. So you know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a device for each kid, or you know, everybody's working on a Chromebook or a laptop or an iPad or something like that. You have a lot of flexibility with the way that you can do those kinds of activities and getting at those soft skills that Martin was talking about. You know, that stick-to-itness and the perseverance and the kinds of things that you just can't sit down and teach in a class. You get to a lot of that with coding.
Martin, I just want to mention there's a little echo maybe. I don't know if you're hearing that, Martin, but a little bit of echo.
I think it's my fault.
Okay. Yeah, Jason, go ahead with you.
Yeah, nice way to call him out, Sally.
Sorry.
Jason, you have anything else in this category?
Yeah, I do. You know, this is such a fun category. There's so many things that you can do with something like this, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up Minecraft. So I want to put in a plug.
Predictable on this show.
Well, you know, you stick with what you know.
That's right. Play to your strengths, Jason.
That's right. Yep, that's exactly it. And mine just happens to be Minecraft and Sunshine, right? One suggestion that I have is called ComputerCraft EDU. It's a Minecraft extension, where you can add little computers into your Minecraft world. So you get these little robots, and you give them commands, and then they go and they carry those out from you know, it could be building a house, it could be digging and finding resources for you. Lots of things that these little automatons can do for you if you put them together. So a great way to introduce kids to programming, especially if they're into Minecraft. And then, you know, maybe that's a way to also get them going with another programming language. This uses Lua, but the nice thing about the EDU version of ComputerCraft is that it's almost a scratch-like interface. So you drag and drop your commands into a grid, push the go button, and then it goes and does what you tell it to. So love ComputerCraft EDU. It's super cool.
So this is going to maybe come up in our news in tech when we're talking about Google Glass and the demise of that, but Microsoft kind of had a similar announcement called HoloLens, mm-hmm. and when they actually demonstrated it, I believe one of the applications was to, you know, be in a Minecraft virtual reality. I don't know if you saw that.
I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but it sounds, from the descriptions that I've seen, it sounds really cool. So I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's amazing. The people that were at the news conference got to try it, and they were just blown away by how real it is and how virtually there you are, even in a make-believe world like Minecraft. So interesting future ahead. Anything else in our technology segment here for Wells Tech Goes to School?
Well, there's lots more there, but I think that's a good overview of some of the things that we've listed there. And again, we'd love to add to the list if you have favorite technology, especially along the lines of introducing students to coding and things like that.
We should probably, now that you've created this nice fancy page, Sally, also put this in the wiki, huh?
That's an idea. Thanks, Martin. I like that.
Where they could actually add it themselves if they've got other resources. So
it's just, yeah, definitely. I think we do have some pages. Well, I think we do have some pages in the wiki. It's just not as extensive. And this was more along the lines of some of our other resource pages, like our ministry resource page and that kind of thing. So, yeah, all good.
All right, let's move on. Are we on to news and tech?
We are, and yeah, you kind of tipped your hat a little bit on that, Martin, but Jason just brought up to me, I didn't realize that Google Glass has gone away. You can't buy it anymore, and I missed out on purchasing, what, $1,500 pair of glasses. I guess I've lost the opportunity.
With no glass in them, yeah.
Yeah. So apparently maybe Google's going to revive it. I don't know if what the future is exactly for Google Glass. I haven't read up on it necessarily, but it seems like there's a lot of talk in this space, like you said, the Oculus Rift and a lot of different things that maybe you're doing virtual reality and interacting using your vision. So,
yep, and you're going to have something, I think, in our picks on that, aren't you?
Coming up very soon.
There's a little tease for that. Speaking of picks, we should maybe do that. Jason, got a pick for us today?
Yes, I have. My pick, let me see if I can just pull this up here real quick. My pick is called it's a 3D scanner. It's by a company called Structure. So let me just pull that up real quick here.
Web address is structure.io.
Structure.io, that's correct. So I've got the page here. I just got to do my screen share. So
you're doing this on Chromebook, by the way, yes?
I am, yeah. I got a nice shiny new Toshiba Chromebook 2, and I absolutely love it. It's my favorite Chromebook I've ever used. So, you know, fanless and full HD screen, and it's just beautiful. So
is that right? An HD screen. Wow.
Yeah, 1920 by 1280 or whatever it is. So
okay.
It's a little tough looking at docs sometimes, but that's beside the point. I get two picks this week, I guess. no, but this structure it's based off of the Kinect hardware. So it's a little camera that uses lasers to determine depth, and then puts all of that into an app. You can attach it to an iPad, or you also can get a hardware kit so that you can plug it into a computer. So if you get that launch bundle, it's a little pricey. It's $500 for the whole thing, but you get the software and you get the camera and the cable and the adapter, all of that kind of stuff. And then they want you to hack it. So they give you low level access. You can build apps around it using the technology. There's just so many different cool things that you can do with this. The reason I bring it up and the reason that I endorse it, I saw it in action at a conference last week, and the guy took it and scanned a person. It took like a minute where he scanned this person, and then he took that file, imported it to a computer, put it into a 3D printer, and then an hour and a half later, we had a little miniature model of this guy that came out of the 3D printer. So he said that what he does is he goes to comic book conventions and he'll set up a booth, and then these people come by in their costumes and he'll scan them and print out their own little action figure of themselves for $25. So there are commercial opportunities for something like this as well.
How accurate was it?
It was amazingly accurate. The 3D model itself, like if you looked at it on the computer, you could tell facial features. The guy who did this is an artist. He's a sculptor, and he said this is by far the best thing that he's seen as far as how these things work and how they're put together. He was the quality of it is very is very good. And then the other part, the other thing that it does with the app is it also takes a picture. So not only do I scan the person, but I have a 3D model of them in full color with, you know, their facial features and everything like that. So it's really cool.
So is this on? Is it in the future for the Bennington School District to have on hand there?
I'm working on writing a grant for it this week.
Very nice. Very nice.
You need to go to school there, huh?
All right, Sally.
My turn, and I'm going to share my screen.
Virtual world, so what do you got?
I have Google Cardboard. I learned about this about 2 weeks ago, and unlike Google Glass, that's $1,500, I was able to buy the cardboard for $25. It was a do-it-yourself kit, and it came, and we put it together. It looked a lot like what I'm showing on my screen right now, and what it does is allow you to put your smartphone, Android and iOS work with it, into this cardboard contraption that has some lenses, and basically you get a virtual reality experience. And you talk about immersive, Jason, and seeing it. I've used it, and I'm all over the place, and it's just really amazing. It totally blocks out everything, and you're in this world. And let's see, we went to Paris and went into the palace and saw the king's bedroom and look up, look down, all this kind of stuff. We went to Chicago and went through the city, and it was not like satellite imagery or anything. It was like a cartoony look graphics. But we saw the Sears Tower or the Willis Building or whatever it's called now. We saw the Bean in Chicago, all that kind of stuff. If you're looking at my screen, you can watch videos that have this side-by-side rendering. And there's some of those on YouTube. If you just search for virtual reality on YouTube, you can find these videos and watch 3D videos. Now, they aren't, you know, the full panorama. They're just like going to the movie and seeing a 3D video, but you can watch them on your smartphone and get that full effect. And there's other apps and things and more being developed. I think there's more on the Android side than there is on the iOS side currently, but it looks like it's kind of a wide open field for people to develop there. I don't know, I felt like, you know, beam me up, Scotty, kind of. It was like the holodeck experience or something, but it is super cool, and it's amazing, the price, and I just think there's going to be more virtual reality coming soon.
So this was from technology. Google, right? This was from Google themselves.
They sponsored the concept, but actually you have to buy the product from other vendors. So I bought mine from a company called Dodo Case, and it's a do-it-yourself. I have a picture of it. I didn't get it ready for the show, but you know, you get all the components. You get cardboard. You get lenses. There's some magnetism involved, and actually, there's a way to have a kind of a button or something on the side of the device that'll allow you to like click on things that you're looking at with your eyes, so you can select things from a menu or whatever. And the ones pictured here have like a little circle thing, and that's the button. The case that I got actually has kind of a tongue depressor, and you push down on that and somehow that clicks on your screen. It's not that it's touching the screen, but there's magnetism involved or something. I don't know.
That's
anyway.
Awesome.
It's pretty amazing. That's all I can say. It looks like a piece of cardboard, but I'm digging the virtual reality. It's cool stuff.
I think there's certainly a classroom application there too. You know, take kids on these virtual journeys where they'd never, you know, in their lives be able to experience.
Right.
So does this work for iPhones as well, or is it just Android?
It does. I've used it with my iPhone. There's not as many apps. Google has an app called Google Spheres. And you can use that to do these full 360 panoramas. And on an Android device, then you can look at your spheres in this way and be able to experience the full 360. So the guy that I heard it demonstrate it said, imagine taking your class to the zoo on a field trip, taking some of these Google Sphere photography, and then reliving the field trip in virtual reality. Or for the kid that didn't get to go along, they can experience it or whatever. So I think there's definitely some education ties, and the price is right to make use of it. You just need some smartphones to be able to view it. So
cool.
It's really funny to watch somebody using it, because they're just like all over the place, you know, just you know, turning the full 360 and looking all different directions. We had.
Well, we don't have a video of you doing this, do we?
No, I started to take some video of someone else doing it, not me, but I thought that would be kind of cruel, but so it's very immersive.
You have to hold it to your face, or is there a strap
right.
that comes with it?
No, no strap. Actually, the company I bought it from has like a hat with a contraption that it'll attach to.
Really?
Whatever.
The yeah. spot for cans, too, and straws.
<That's> cool. But I think it's kind of, well, especially mine with the popsicle stick, it's kind of like a ViewMaster viewer feel. But yeah, I can't tell you how dumb you look, but how immersive it really is.
Guaranteed to get you beat up in school.
Yeah, whatever. Just a true nerd.
Actually, geeks are a little more trendy now than they used to be. So people like geeks now. Anyway,
Google Cardboard.
All right, my pick is not nearly as cool as either of those two picks. It's probably a little more practical, however. And that is one of my favorite note-taking apps, which has actually been one of my picks before. But there's a website around it now, and I think a very useful application for OneNote. OneNote is a Microsoft product, comes with the Office Suite. So if you have Office 365 or if you just have a regular Office Suite installed, you're going to have OneNote as well. And they're really trying to position OneNote. OneNote is a great note-taking application and has entrenched itself in on the laptops of a lot of college students and high school students because it really does a nice job at taking notes. And it kind of mimics the real-world experience of note-taking where you have a notebook and you have tabs and pages and sub-pages. And it'll collect anything. It'll collect audio, video, images, text, of course. It'll do OCR. You can dump documents in it. It's really just kind of a great trapper keeper, digital trapper keeper, dating myself a little bit, but trapper keeper for your computer. But basically, they've created a nice website called OneNoteForTeachers.com. And a bunch of videos here, it talks about how to, you know, the uses for a teacher. And, you know, it's really kind of custom made for a teacher and a classroom environment because it's all about collecting content. So there's organizational tips. There's tips about delivering curriculum with OneNote. You can collaborate in the classroom, kind of like a Google Docs experience, except it's a little bit more structured. I think it's actually a little more elegant. You can create interactive lessons with it. Just a good productivity tool in general for a teacher trying to keep track of all the stuff and resources they're putting together to try and you know, kind of keep things straight. So you could have a notebook for each class you teach, and a tab for each subject or each lesson, and then collect different pages for that lesson, and then you've got them, and you can share them online as well. So, Microsoft has a great deal for educators and students, where Office 365 can be a free tool, similar to the way Google does it, and just some really solid tools. So. That is my pick. I'm a big OneNote fan. I use it for everything. If you're looking for something that would do that for you, a lot of people are using Evernote, those kinds of things. I've really decided OneNote is the best tool on the market for that kind of stuff. So, OneNoteForTeachers.com if you're interested.
Excellent.
All right.
I'm not a OneNote user, so I can learn something there, I'm sure.
It's an awesome tool. Let's move on to Wells Insider.
Yep, and I have on the screen the Wells Annual Report in a very nice, easy-to-read and view-online mode. We also have it available in PDF, so if you want to download a copy, you can do that as well. So we'll have a link in the show notes. You want to check out all that's happened in the past year with Wells various areas of ministry and support, this is the place to look. Beautiful document and lots to be joyful about the work that our Synod is doing. So check out the annual report online.
We'll have a link to that in the show notes. It's also available in the Wells mobile app. If you go to Synod Reports, there's a link to it there. You can watch it or read it on your phone or your tablet. Let's move on to a couple of things. Kind of an exciting Sunday coming up, because that is the day registration opens for the Wells Tech Conference, which is going to be held this summer in Pewaukee at Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center, just down the road from the CMM here, the Center for Mission and Ministry in Wisconsin. And we have just a tremendous lineup of sessions available, and if you want to get in on early bird pricing, which is $199, you can get online on Sunday. Go to wells.net/WellsTechConf, and there'll be a link there to register for the conference. So get in there, get your picks for your sessions, because we do have limited seating in almost all of them. So if there's a couple that you're really interested in, you'll be able to see all of the sessions there and all who the speakers are. Just a great opportunity to bring together the Wells Tech family. And if you're interested in really anything technology, AV related, church management software, prospect management, the list goes on and on about all the stuff that we're going to have there. And in fact, you're watching or listening to three of the pre-conference workshop speakers. I'm doing one on Inbox Zero. So keeping your inbox under control and actually empty. Sally, you're doing something on Final Web, right? Final Web
training? I am. A full day of Final Web training, yep.
And our good friend Jason, you are doing Google Classroom or Google Apps? Which one is it?
We're gonna hit everything, Martin. It's gonna be 8 hours of... You can, if you didn't know it, Google could do it, you'll come away learning and knowing how. No, not really. It's not going to be nearly that comprehensive, because everybody's minds would probably melt, mine included.
And both of you are doing all day, so morning and afternoon session. I'm just doing a morning session, I think. So.
And all three of us are speaking during the regular conference as well, so there'll be plenty. I can't wait to unveil the site and show folks all the wonderful speakers that we have lined up. It's going to be exciting.
And at this very moment, I'm building a mobile app that will go along with the show or with the conference, and that's going to be really cool as well. You'll be able to build your own schedule, and we've got all kinds of interactive tools there where you can interact with other attendees or speakers, surveys, all kinds of cool stuff. So we'll let you know more about that as we move forward.
Yeah, I hear registrations for this are going to sell like hotcakes, so I think we're
going to get in early. Okay.
Register early and register often.
Yeah, early and often. WLC is doing something, Sal. You want to share something about that?
Yeah, actually they're doing several things, and our friend Jason is involved in that as well. There's several of their summer summit activities going on, and I just want to throw a link to that in the show notes. They have a Google for Education Week coming up in June, and Jason will be presenting there. iPad in Education, July 13th through 17th, and then Web App Coding and Development in Education, July 20th through 24th. So something for everyone going on at WLC this summer, and you can also get college credit in the process. So can't beat that. Check it out with the link in the show notes.
Beautiful. We only have a little bit of feedback this week. So, Sally, what do you got?
Actually, it was me that was doing the feedback, and so I'll just own it right there. A couple of interesting links, and this is along the lines of aggregated education resources. There's two different pages. This one's called Google Apps and Chromebooks Web App Recommendations, so specifically applications that will work on Chromebooks and extensions for Chromebooks. And this is a lengthy page, folks, so if you're using Chromebooks in the classroom, you might find some really useful stuff here. All kinds of different things available on this page, so check it out. And then also in the Chromebook spectrum, a page of extensions specifically for the Chrome browser. And I use some of these, but I was not aware of all of them, so you might want to check this out as well. There's my friend Snagit represented there. Adblock is excellent, keeping advertisements off your screen. And many, many more that I think you'll find useful for your classroom setting. So check out the links in the show notes, especially if you're a Chromebook user.
Yeah, I saw TLDR on there. That's one of my favorites. Too long, didn't read. Love that.
What does that do, Jason?
It basically takes content on a page and truncates it. It uses an algorithm to summarize what it is. So if you've got a really long article, you just push that button, and then it summarizes it, and then you read the summary. So too long, didn't read.
Reader's Digest version, yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right, cool. Awesome. Is that it for feedback, Sally?
That will do it for this week, yes, sir.
Okay, if you'd like to contribute, and we wish you would, go to wellstech.wells.net and enter a comment there or leave a voicemail. We also are on all the social networks, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, Google+, Digo, Jason mentioned, one of our favorites as well. Or just send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We would love to include your comment or suggestion on next week's show. So you math and technology teachers out there, we'd love to hear from you.
Definitely.
Sally, what are we doing next week? I assume we're going to have a show, another one.
Next week we're going to celebrate because we finally got the Wells Tech Conference live and ready for people to register. And we're going to celebrate by just kind of walking you through the large selection of sectionals, the different speakers and things like that that are available as you register for the Wells Tech Conference. Looking forward to unveiling all that selection for you next week on the show.
Yeah, and what we have in mind is to try and feature particularly interesting topics and sessions and speakers, maybe get them on and do some interviews and a little bit of a tease. What's your appetite for what you might hear if you were in attendance at the conference? So I'm looking forward to that process. Mm-hmm. Featured video is something we already talked about on the show, Khan Academy, right?
That's right. I found a whole video series that'll help those who want to use Khan Academy from the teacher perspective. So I pointed out before that there's a lot of online resources that you can read and screenshots and tip pages and things like that, but Khan Academy's also produced a video series, and I'll just include in the show notes one of those to get you started, one that's about their software and how students interact with it. It's not just about watching videos on Khan Academy. There's lots more that you can do there, and this video will give you an idea to get you started.
Cool. Thank you. Jason, as always, excellently done. You put the O in guru.
It's going to be my new tagline.
That's right. Guru with four O's.
That's right.
All right. Sally, excellent as well. Thank you for all that you do to make this show go. And of course, our viewers and listeners, we appreciate you joining us. Spread the word. Let everybody know that Wells Tech has got some good stuff going on. So we will talk to you next week. Blessings.